All right, you want to talk McIntyre at 62 points or Dan Hollins at 87 points?
Welcome to the Rugby Rant Podcast Show, your premier North American rugby podcast. Growing rugby, one fan at a time.
And welcome, rugby fans. It's that time again to join us here on the Rugby Rant Podcast Show for episode 127. As a reminder, my name is Ty, the Saffa Braga. Here is your foreign player assignment for today. We just got new titles and I added my own.
We're posting now, is that it? Sideline commentator below my name.
So on that note, I welcome to the show again my colleague, and of course, cohort and a commentator extraordinaire, recently taking up his spot on the sideline with the Chicago Hounds. Again, congratulations to Rob the Hammer Hammerschmidt. And then again, back for another bout here with the Rugby Rant Boys is Mike the Grand Poobah Perizzini. I think we need to call an audible on this one for a moment. Mike, you can't have two titles. OG Rooster Booster, Grand Poobah, the Emperor. What is it?
OG Grand Poobah.
It's gets too long to put it that one. Yeah. So you kind of got to.
Give me the system there. Yeah. This is how I ended up with my fictitious nonsense title below. It's just that I felt like he had two titles, and I've been here longer than him. I don't even have one.
And here's the thing. I was going to say, Scott, who's not here today, because I don't know why. You know, maybe he's still upset about that loss that happened on Sunday. He didn't want to face the music to the Hammer, so he's got to fill me in. He's the one that gave me that, so you could blame him for, giving me two nicknames.
Oh, okay. No, I like it. We'll allow it on this occasion because, of course, we like you. And that's why we continue to bring you back. But on that note, though, Rooney and Noah was the surprise one for me this weekend, boys. My Super Brew weekend was not successful. It's the first time I've gotten more than one pick wrong. So I was doing well until this weekend, but congratulations to Rob and the Nola fans, and of course everybody out there.
Speaking of Super Brew, Ty, we got to throw a shout out to Week 4 winner, one of my favorite gals from the Crescent City, Sheila Falcon, the winner for Week 4. She did a nice job. I think she had like 9.5 points, something so bad.
Yeah, that's. I think 10 is like the maximum you can get with the Grand Slam points. So she must not only have gotten the win correct, but the points difference probably spot on in one of them.
And hey, by the way, I got to tell you, in a bitter irony, she can't buy Nola gear. Sorry.
Well, you'll have to find a second best team there, because that $25 voucher will go to good use. And as a reminder for those of you that have not yet participated, it is absolutely free to do so. Don't worry. Yes, there is a continual point system that will accrue and decide our final winner for the grand prize, second and third place. But every week, even if you jump in on week 5 that's coming up and you win that round, you're still going to get something, and that keeps everybody in the fight. So follow us under the handle at Rugby Rant Pod to be able to learn more about that, how we've joined forces with Rugby Now to share with you the opportunity to win those Shop MLR vouchers through the Super Brew contest. And as
she can buy a Hounds jersey, though, because she's coming up for the Hounds Nola game.
No ways, Rob. You can't send a Nola fan to a Nola away game in a Hounds stadium wearing the wrong gear.
I'm not telling her to wear it. She could bring it up, and we could, we could probably do something for her up here. I got connections. Oh.
There we go. All right. I like where that's going. Not said, but what isn't said is said.
Enough said.
Yeah, enough said. And on that note, gentlemen, let's be back in just a moment. Stick around, because we're going to dive into the familiar, what you now know is the news piece as Around the Pitch. We'll be back in just a moment.
When we pick up the ball, we also pick up a legacy. A legacy that stretches beyond your current team. A legacy built on the backs of those who came before you with hard work. And for those who will come after you, we promise it won't be easy. But we'll be there, supporting you on and off. the field.
So, gentlemen, you know how it goes, but a reminder for all those fans that are tuning in here, we're going to share with you what we think you should know about when it comes to rugby from across the realms. We're going to do it in a quick fire round, starting off. Mike, you are the one first up. Tell us what you think fans should know about.
I was going to say, big news coming kind of out of MLR front office. MLR is looking to raise $100 million in investments. Didn't say what for, how they're going to get it, but this is kind of along the same vein as, you know, CVC when they invested all that money into the Six Nations, or when, you know, Silver Lake bought a stake in New Zealand and the All Blacks. So maybe, you know, MLR is looking for some big name partner to come in, give a nice influx of cash, and, you know, spread it out to the teams as well. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any bites coming out of this.
I remember that debate when they were talking about the name of that, you know, the Kiwi Rugby, the All Blacks, synonymous as one of the greatest teams, whereas going up for what they called for sale, right? And eventually they made a settlement. They got a lot of money. MLR is just like straight up, we're here. We're here. We'll sell you whatever you need. Give us the money. But of course, it is an ambitious goal, but it's not completely out of the realm of what's going on in sports. So it's a good highlight there. And hopefully they'll share a little bit more details of how they wish to attain that and attract that in the weeks to come. But I'm sure, Mike, you'll keep us abreast as to what's happening there. Let's hand it over to the Hammer.
So we've been talking about the 50 cap club, and I always feel terrible if we ever stop before we get to that last 50th player that reaches 50 MLR caps, then perhaps we're, you know, shunning some of those players. So we got to go with it. We got to get to 50. And so I'm going to recognize three. Number 30, Mikey Uteo. He's been on the show, played with San Diego, went down to Utah, went back to San Diego, is playing there now. He just won his 30th cap against Houston. And then he got Josh Larson, the captain for New England, at number 31. He got his 50th cap against OGDC. And finally, wearing this in his honor today, Pat O'Toole from the NOLA Gold got his 50th cap this past weekend with against the Iron Workers in a winning effort, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number 32 on the list. And I got to say, I'll talk about it in a moment, but I had a chat with Dave Carney, of course, of Leinster and Ireland fame. And I asked him the very question, like, so my question to you, Dave, should caps be issued for club appearances?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely, I think so, yeah. You know, I'm not saying you get 50 caps, but you definitely get one cap when you make your first appearance. You know, it's something you do with your country. It's something, you know, we do in Leinster. You know, you get a cap when you get your first appearance. So, you know, I don't see why not. It's a nice tradition. It's a nice touch. And, you know, it's special to have something like that for, you know, you'll have it for life when you finish up. And you know, to say that you represented your club, and you'll proudly have it hanging up somewhere, no doubt, in your house.
100. So, guys, for doubters, if it's good enough for Leinster, I'm saying it's good enough for the MLR.
I like it. And on that note, you had the opportunity to speak with him and capture a little bit of that for our fans. Mm-hmm. You know, and tell us a little bit about that one again so we don't miss it.
Yeah, so I got to throw out a shout out to Ian Wegreich, a mate of mine. He's affiliated with the Hounds. I'll talk about how Dave and I got connected, and he was actually in Chicago last week. But shout out to Ian, who hooked us up, and I had an opportunity. It wasn't long, maybe 10, 15 minutes. I shout out three or four questions to him, and he responded. I posted it on the MLR Fan Zone. It's out there for public consumption for Hounds fans.
By way of the Rugby Rant page. Right. So anybody who wants to check it out, it's short and sweet. I think it's actually just under, it's definitely between it's 10 like and 15
7 or 8 minutes.
Minutes.
It's very short.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, really easy viewing and really great opportunity to be able to speak with one of the legends of the game that's still providing and still supporting rugby, not only, you know, in Europe, but also coming across to Chicago to be able to help out a little bit, even if it is just with his presence and his experience. So let's dive into the next piece. And I actually wanted to be able to talk about something a little bit adjacent to rugby. This is a hot topic. It kind of blew up overnight in all the social media platforms. And that's because I think people are always excited when this happens, because it shows you that rugby is reaching different realms, different areas, and growing. The introduction, or should I say the reveal, that they will be bringing out Rugby 24 in all playable formats. It's a new rugby game. We all have our favorite. Whether it's Jono Lobu rugby or 2003, whatever it is, everybody's got their favorite and everybody has an opinion on it. But let me tell you the facts about this game here. It's going to include 130 licensed teams. That's great. It is going to include leagues such as the URC, Pro D2, Top 14, and I like this one in particular, gentlemen, it's going to have all the licensed countries that are participating in the 2023 Rugby World Cup. You can play as South Africa. I got to do it the opposite way. South Africa or the U.S., whoever you'd like. Oh, sorry, it can't be the U.S. That was a faux pas. So Canada and the U.S. Sorry.
You just have an out because, you know, either way, you got a player in the game right there, because you can cheer for two countries.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Right. So I digress. And you know, it's exciting to be able to get something new like this, as it engages new audiences across the globe and it continues to be able to expand the brand of rugby and the product of it. So that's going to be released in September 2023. A combination of different companies will be working this project. So look out for that next release. We'll hopefully be able to have a chance to talk more about it down the road when we get more information. But it's exciting and fans are excited, and so they should be. Let's dive into the next here and handing it back to the Grand Poobah himself. Mike, what else have you got?
Yeah, this is a little old, but still, 2 weeks ago, Vancouver Sevens finished up. They said that close to, 67,000 people attended over 3 days. So that's good. You know, people are going out to watch rugby sevens. New Zealand ended up winning for the women's, and Argentina ended up winning for the men's. But most importantly, U.S. Sevens women's won a bronze, making it their fifth medal in a row. So every single tournament that they've been in this year, all five, they have placed, which is an amazing feat. I believe they're in third place overall with points. I can check real quick. Yes, they're in third place overall. And it looks like Hong Kong Sevens is going to be the next tournament at the end of the month. So looking forward to seeing how they do there.
So they've set themselves up, Mike, for, being in the Olympics and qualifying for, being right. able to compete at that team of six, one of the 16 teams for the Olympics coming up.
Yeah. I don't know if they've qualified yet. I believe New Zealand was the only one that qualified this weekend, but it's coming up close where they're going to be reaching that goal shortly.
Yeah. Yeah, the consistency is what's so great to be able to see in building that confidence on that run towards greater achievements. So great job for the USA women's side, for the sevens, and men, take note. So as we continue forward, let's hand it back to you, Rob. What else do you have to share?
Well, now that there's a team actually in the city in which I live, right over there, I can actually have something to talk about on a week-to-week basis. So the Chicago Hounds have started almost like a get-to-know-you series of forms, or introductions, as they call them, to the greater community in Chicagoland, and they've kind of established a region of about 200 miles total, so, outwards from Chicago. And so that they've started that last week. It was as a part of the Big Shoulders Fund. It was in conjunction with a fundraiser that's here in Chicago. Like I said before, Dave Carney was here, actually in attendance. They also had some more of their Irish connections involved, including three players. That would be Luke Carty, of course, USA. And the Hounds, Patty Ryan, who also was captain of the United States, and then Mark O'Keefe. And so, kind of the week before St. Patrick's Day, they came in. It was the, kind of the Irish theme, Irish connections, and designed to intro it to, make connections with the greater Chicagoland area. This took place downtown. It was a really nice event. They dressed to the nines and everybody looked good, but it was great to see them really using their marketing strategy to reach out, you know, to other parts of the Chicago community and introduce them to rugby and the Hounds.
Yeah, and it's fantastic to be able to see this. And this is one of the criticisms we've had on the show in the past from other franchises who shall not be named. We don't want to point any fingers. But their lack of ability to engage the greater rugby community in their own areas. You know, people who have got roots in the community, they want to have an opportunity to be able to see those influences from overseas come about. And it's great to be able to see a side like the Hounds, you know, taking on this this important step. And, of course, bringing in the influence of Ireland. And it's great to be able to see that. You know, OGs have it with a connection with, I think it's Scotland. Right? Yeah. And Toulon with Utah. Uh-huh. Or is it Toulouse or Toulon?
No, it's Toulouse. It's Toulouse. And then Clermont with Nola Gold. And, and of course, New Zealand with the Iron Workers as a strong New Zealand
connection. Yeah, exactly, right? So it's great to be able to see that continuing that tradition and forming these ties with greater rugby organizations. A lot to be learned both ways. So let's dive into my last and final piece as we talk about more rugby, but an American side playing elsewhere in the Super Rugby Americas Challenge. Seven teams participating across the season. The end of the away leg for the American Raptors is now coming to a close. And unfortunately, it puts them at 0-4 on their record, but certainly some great opportunities to learn from this experience. They're a young side, relatively, has been brought together under duress in many cases. Well, I would say duress, under haste because of visas and things like that. Yes, would they have wished to have more time to be prepared? Absolutely. But the results have been encouraging so far. This last one, not so flattering. It was Raptors taking on Yakare, and the scoreline was 3-25 against the Raptors. Although, interestingly enough, that puts them at 6 overall. One team sits below them in 7th place, and what separates them is not the points, but the points difference. A lot of lessons still to be learned, but they, of course, are young as a side and young as a league. In fact, their first season, so if you want to continue to be able to watch great rugby in addition to MLR, you can catch that on ESPN Plus, as they have now provided options in both Spanish and in English commentary, so you get to be able to enjoy that through that service there, in addition to their own website at AmericanRaptors.com. So check them out. More great rugby is always being played just around the corner. And just around the corner, we're going to be talking a little bit more about interesting moves and controversial decisions and new trials being introduced to change the tackle height in the community game of rugby. What do we think about it? Stick around. You'll find out in just a few moments.
Tighthead Brewing Company is not just Chicago's premier location to watch rugby and enjoy quality ales and lagers. It is also a great place to enjoy local acts performing live music every Thursday and Saturday nights. Additionally, their Wednesday night trivia nights are something not to be missed. Tighthead is located in Mundelein, Illinois, and easily accessible for many Chicagoans, as it is just steps away from the metro. Owner Bruce Durr and the Tighthead staff are dedicated to ensure your microbrew experience is as tight as their beers. Bruce's love for rugby extends beyond the origin of his brewery's name. Tighthead is committed to supporting the rugby community. This includes his support for Lake County RFC and our own Rugby Rant podcast show. Tighthead's tap room is like the familiar rugby clubhouse in which friends and teammates can meet, socialize, and enjoy the wide variety of brews on tap. Regardless of whether your palate enjoys a good IPA or dark barrel-aged brew, Tighthead can deliver. Hey, Chicago, when you want rugby, Tighthead Brewing Company will satisfy your thirst. Tighthead, it's worth more than a try.
And welcome back, rugby fans. Of course, you're here with the Rugby Rant Podcast team. Joining me here is your opportunity to learn more about what these gentlemen here think about the new introduction or proposal, the trials, the various saga that shall be about the thoughts of changing the community game forevermore with changing the regulation tackle height. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I am sure you will by the end of this conversation, and probably do a deep dive of your own to be able to learn about how it may change the game. But we're going to give you what we think might be our opinion for the better or for the worse, how it may change the game of rugby forevermore. But before we dive into it, it's important that you recognize what we are talking about and what the rugby powers that be are talking about is the community game. What defines that? Amateur rugby. The elite status is not included in this. So don't worry, the MLR is not introducing this. Your Six Nations is not introducing this. This is about the community game in an attempt to be able to allow it to grow by overcoming many of the obstacles that sets before it, which many parents who are introducing or likely to introduce their kids to this new sport, concerns about player welfare, safety, injuries, and everything that comes with that. And this is their attempt to be able to make the game more accessible. And on that note, we're going to evaluate the merits and the demerits, considering how it may change the game for the better or for the worse, starting out with Mike.
So starting off for the better, the vast majority of concussions happen in the tackle. And so World Rugby's thinking, by lowering the tackle height, you, in fact, lower the percentage of concussions that happen to the tackle player, which that ends up happening. To be honest, from one study that I've saw out of University of Bristol, there was a 30% reduction in hits to the neck and the head when the tackle height was lowered. I think World Rugby is trying to do the right thing in, making the game safer. I just don't know, how much legislation that really needs to have. I think this would be great for the youth game of rugby. I don't know so much so for like the men's and women's club level. I think, maybe reducing the tackle height and starting it younger with kids and teaching them to tackle lower, and then, set an age limit and say, by a certain time period, we want everyone to be able to tackle. I think they're saying below the sternum. That I think that's a more realistic goal instead of what they plan on doing is just wholesale switching. But it's a move by World Rugby to try and make rugby safer, especially for those that are looking at this and saying, "Hey, a lot of head injuries. How do we want to change this?"
Yeah, and I want to be able to take the opportunity to come and frame that conversation again and highlight the importance of player welfare with a quote from Alan Gilpin, who sits as the World Rugby's chief executive. And his words are, if our sport is to continue to grow, we must ensure that we are accessible and relevant to more people around the world. So that's an interesting thought there, is making it more relevant, right? So it's more accessible. It's the obstacles, as I mentioned before, could be overcome. One of the ways, as you pointed out now, is kind of an amendment to the original attempt, which the RFU has egg all over their face by saying, in January they had to put out a formal apology because they didn't actually ask the opinion of the rugby community themselves. They just said, tackling below the waist is the new rule. Now that's been adjusted. They've realized that wasn't the right way. They're looking at engaging different communities and asking them to participate willfully to be able to share their data. So it is also important to recognize for fans that this is not going to happen overnight. There's suddenly not going to be a switch. We're going to turn on and turn off tackling, right? It's going to be a process before we actually adopt it across many different unions, but they're asking for the support of the unions right now to continue these trials. South Africa being one of those key partners, France is the most important partner because they've already done this. So I didn't want to dive any farther into that, but we have to recognize there is precedent with the RFU of England already implementing what they thought was the answer by the waist. Now it's been adjusted up to the sternum. They think this might appease many of the rugby community players. Let's hand it over to Rob.
Thanks, Ty. I've listened to several podcasts. I've read quite a few articles on this issue, and I'm really, really mixed in how I feel about this. Because for every argument I come in with on one side, I then look at the alternative. Some of my concerns about this are several fold. Number one, what do we do with players, especially at the international level, that are really tall? I mean, Evan Etzebeth is 6'9", right? Imagine him, you know, trying to put in a solid tackle against a scrum half, you know, mm-hmm. like, you know, Andre Dupont. You know, it's going to take a quite a bit of effort to drop his tackle height in order to hit below the sternum, okay?
Right, and that's not taking into consideration the players moving downward anyways.
Correct, and I'll get to that, so don't steal my thunder.
You know, I yellow card for Ty.
Yeah, I saw that firsthand this weekend as I'm on the sideline commentating. I don't know if people know that I'm commentating for the Hounds matches. As I'm commentating, I got a firsthand look at it because I'm field side, and right on my side of the field as I'm standing there, McLean Jones from the Hounds, you know, try to put in a low tackle on Ross. The scrum half, not Ross Broad. That's the way Wilkie pronounces Ross Brody. And he tried to drop his tackle, right? But of course, Brody dropped his shoulders too. And now all of a sudden mm-hmm. you've got the guy being tackled, dropping his shoulder, right? And McLean Jones didn't have time to react, even though he is making an attempt to lower the shoulder. So I think it poses a challenge for tall players. I also know from firsthand experience that, you know, concussions are often from knees. You yeah. drop your head to the waist. You get hit with a hip. You get hit with a high knee that's coming up when somebody's pumping the legs. That happens frequently, as well as the fact that, you know, you've got like friendly fire, if you will, that some players, you know, come into a tackle. It's a double tackle and, you know, your teammate coming in, you knock heads. Now you've got the concussion. So, you know, it's a contact sport. It makes it tough to legislate a lot of that out of it because it's just going to happen. You know, finally, boy, my concern is how you roll it out. And Mikey kind of touched upon it. You bring it in at youth and kind of progressively work it forward. England or the RFU ran into this issue when they rolled it out. They didn't define it well enough. They didn't get the input, as you mentioned, and therefore they got backlash from a huge number of clubs, 278 clubs, and there's now a community club union that is asking for a special meeting of the RFU and a vote of no confidence. You know, so it's all about how you roll it out. And USA Rugby's struggling in a lot of areas. They're making headway in some. Do we trust them to roll it out here in the United States? I don't know.
Yeah. And on that note, I'm going to throw it back to you just for a sec, because we're talking about the youth game and you've had experience at high school coaching level with the same game in addition to other sports. So here I'm going to frame it again. So bring it in at youth. No one's going to disagree with that. That's kind of what we've been touting for generations on the show. But the thing is, here in the U.S., I've recently discovered that contact sports are introduced much later than they are, say, for example, in South Africa or New Zealand. I grew up playing tackle rugby from the age of 7 years old. We didn't have boots, right? We were barefoot, but we introduced tackle rugby. So the tackle technique was introduced at a much earlier age, and you grew up understanding proper tackle technique. But here in the U.S., it's introduced much later, the contact aspect of the sport. Is that a factor, too?
I don't think so. You know, they introduced tackling at a pretty young age, in American football. I would love to see them do more of, you know, hawk tackling as it's now become known, or, you know, it's become associated with the Seattle Seahawks. I'd like to see them introduce it and incorporate rugby a bit more in that regard. I think the biggest issue from a youth sport component is getting officials that are quality enough to be able to spot it and call it. Because, of course, mm-hmm. anytime you try to legislate something like that, what happens? When you have an incidental contact, you have somebody go high, and an official misses it because of inexperience, the whole side, every parent on the sideline suddenly becomes an expert in tackle height. You know,
I think
there are some other things that have to be legislated into it. I was going to leave this a bit, but one of those is, isn't there some responsibility for the runner? Mm-hmm. This is actually France legislated into it in their version that the runner can't drop their shoulder height.
Interesting. And that's one of the things we're talking about. And this is why trials have to be able to reveal these flaws. So you can evaluate them and you can, of course, set new expectations for the next round of trials. And they believe they've already done this. And the research suggests that in the initial trials in the French community game, and again, they don't describe exactly what levels of the game, but it does umbrella, it does encompass everything of the amateur version. So not professionals or semi-professionals. And they say that they saw a 31% reduction in head injuries through the trial. 31% is massive right now. But where I am confused, though, is when you continue to be able to read more and more of these articles and they go deeper and deeper and they offer different quotes from these officials, they tend to start to blur and start to almost conflict. Because on one hand, they say, we want to put player welfare first. But I found a quote that actually says from World Rugby Chairman Bill Beaumont, who I have my own gripes about, but that's a different show. Here's what he said. He said, it is important that we continue to explore ways that we can make our game as enjoyable and as safe as possible. The community game is the lifeblood of our sport, representing 99% of our participants. And the proposed tackle height adjustment has already delivered positive game shape and playing experience and outcomes in the trials. It is essential to the future of our sport. So is it about getting more people involved, or is it about keeping those people that are involved safe? I understand it's a balance, but let's hand it over to Mike to be able to hear what you think of the downsides. And if you want to address that last comment first, that's understandable.
I was going to say, I think rugby is an inherently dangerous sport. You know, when we're recruiting guys, people know you're getting tackled. People know you're playing without pads. There's that sense of, hey, you know, you're going to get hurt one way or the other. You just kind of have to accept that. You know, we're not made out of glass. You could take a hit. But those concussions are incredibly devastating, but you know what you're getting into in rugby. So I think
you don't walk into a boxing ring and not expecting to get hit.
Yeah. Yeah. And so to get, you know, to make rugby safer, I think is kind of an oxymoron, because at some point you're just going to lose the essence of what, you know, rugby is. That being said, with lowering the tackle height, I am absolutely against it. I think that it is, from all the studies that have been done, and so there's a study, I think I said it was University of Bristol, is actually University of Bath that did it, where they looked at the championship game. And so that is professional rugby players. They looked at lowering the tackle height to the armpit. And they said that while there's a 30%, like I said, there's a 30% reduction in hits to the head and the neck, there is absolutely no difference in the amount, in the outcome of injuries and concussions that has happened. So what essentially happens is the tackler ends up getting concussed more often than the
tackled player. It's more at risk.
And so, it ends up, you know, you end up switching who ends up getting concussed. And the same, that's the thing too. There's in World Rugby's press release for this, they mentioned that, you know, this will reduce, you know, knocks to the head by 31%. And they give you the study that was done by the University of Stellenbosch in South Africa. And in that study, in the conclusion, they said, despite a trend towards reducing injuries, head injuries, and SRC, lowering maximum legal tackle height to armpit level did not change SRC incidents in the in this amateur rugby cohort, meaning just by reducing the tackle height, it did not mean that, in fact, there was a reduction in injuries.
The theory and the practice isn't really matching up.
And the biggest thing is by lowering the tackle height, you are lowering the tackling player. Mm-hmm. And that's where all of a sudden you're going from a guy who's, maybe he's aiming for the chest. Now he's aiming for the hips. And maybe he goes a little too low and he catches a knee to the forehead. And I can tell you what, a knee to the forehead does a hell of a lot of damage too.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, the head to head or the shoulder to the head that we have to worry about. And so I think it is incredibly, studies that I've seen, it's incredibly irresponsible to say that, by lowering the tackle height, we're making the game safer. We're
I 100% believe what you're saying. You know, both you and Rob are very much on the same page when it comes to the fact that we recognize that the intention is to be able to reduce injury, but it also provides more opportunity for it by way of the tackler. Yeah. I'm a victim of that too. I tell you, the one time I actually had my nose broken is when I was going in for a tackle and the knee came straight up as I was going head down. Yeah, I mean, look, it could have been worse for me. Yeah, broken nose is pretty bad, but I wasn't concussed or anything. I tell you what, I was pretty sore for a long time, but I didn't want the rules of the game to be changed. I kind of knew what I was going into. Now, maybe that's an old mentality of thinking about it. Maybe we're the old guard, right? We got to think about the next generations to come, how they may enjoy the game. And we're going to dive a little bit into what that game would look like in the future as we get a little bit further into this. But before we do, I wanted to throw it back to Rob to challenge him to be able to tell me what he thinks are the positives behind this.
Yeah, I'm not all out against it. As I said from the get-go, I'm kind of torn. Here's the deal. I think if it's going to happen, they've got to define it. They've got to make sure that all officials, coaches, players understand what is the tackle height. They've got to train people on that, whether it's, you know, training players to tackle lower, provide interpretations for officials and prepare coaches to help their athletes learn how to drop that tackle height. I think a component needs to come in, as I said before, with the runner. They need to change the dynamics of the runner because, listen, a guy drops his shoulder height. What are you going to do? You're going to try to run him over. You're going to try to, go into that contact, and you're going to drop your shoulder height, and inevitably it's going to create a problem. I mean, look at the pick and goes. You see it at the base of a ruck,
right.
You know, they're trying to score, everybody's head is below their hips to try to score. That's going to create problems. Right. And finally, I think they need to address the protocols. If you want to make it safer, and this is starting in the amateur game and some of the lawsuits are coming out of the amateur game. Well, what is the amateur game doing in post-concussion protocols? Do they have them?
Yeah, that's a fair point. How do they identify them? Whatever it is. Yeah.
I don't know how they treat it. So basically guys are on their own. They talked about a guy out of the UK who's involved in a lawsuit who's had all these concussions, or like 70 concussions, but he plays like, I thought they said like 70 games a year.
Jeez, he's averaging one a game.
I don't know. I may have my numbers mixed up, but I want to. The number of games he was playing was absolutely absurd. And at some point, you go, like, I had a mate of mine, Mark Zdenovic, a great guy, and he had a number of concussions successfully. And he was told by a doctor, he said, "You can't keep this up." And during the prime of his athletic, you know, prowess, he had to give up rugby. He didn't get out of the game totally, but he had to give up playing. And he recognized the importance of his overall long-term health care. You know, clearly at some level, at least in the amateur game, and to some level, the professional game, players have to accept their own responsibility. So I think it's, you know, I'm okay with it, but we all got to be realistic about this approach in all those components.
So, Rob, let's stick to that just for a moment. And you've done a great job of addressing the one part, and likewise for Mike, is the player welfare aspect. And we've spoken that at length from a couple of different angles. But what about the other point that Beaumont brought up, which is growing the game? Do you think it might have the desired effect to be able to get more people to take up the sport?
Well, I can tell you from my experience in dealing with young athletes, both in middle school and high school, yeah. Especially when you saw a lot of the CTE issues come out of the NFL and the lawsuits come out of the NFL here in America, there was clearly a concern by parents that concussions were an issue. And a lot of parents, the blowback, there was a period of about 3 or 4 years where the numbers of football participants, and you're drawn from some of those same athletes, by the way, were dropping. Kids were going into lacrosse. Why? Because they perceived lacrosse as not having the concussion issues, and in actual fact, I don't know that the numbers are quite as large, but concussion, it's a contact sport. It's
still an issue there.
So it was kind of they were lulled into a false sense of security there. And so I think by making these attempts, there's a better public perception, but there's other things they could do. Some of the things I mentioned that could help improve that.
So, Mike, let me throw it to you, though. Given the two choices, which one is the lesser of the two evils? You know, if you choose to be able to say, you know, to drop it or to grow. Well, sorry, player. Let me rephrase this. With the player welfare at one side and growing the game at the other, what is another alternative, do you think, to be able to achieve those two things? Because it's a difficult one to be able to do, right?
I don't know. I think speaking from someone that coaches and plays at, you know, men's club and women's club level, I
don't
think
you play in the women's team?
They do not.
Oh,
not
it's because of the hair. I got it.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Just kidding, everybody. Just leave the mic you a little bit.
I was going to say, anyone, if they've made that decision to play rugby, I don't think it matters. This will not change, you know, their decision. Like, oh, wow, it's lower now. Yeah, absolutely. I think
I'm going to play.
I
think it's true at the younger level, but not at the men's club level. We know it's inherently dangerous.
Yeah. And so I think that we know it's inherently dangerous. And so I don't know if it's going to have an effect there. I think what, Rob was saying, it might have an effect with, young players because
their parents encourage them to play.
Well, yeah, that or, the kid could say, hey, I want to play rugby. Oh, here, and they look it up. Oh, they've changed it. Oh, it's going to be, a lower tackle height. It's perceived. I think it's perceived safety. It's it doesn't actually do anything.
False sense of security is the phrase that Rob threw out. Yeah,
and it's that perception. I would say it's like safety theater. Like look what we're doing. We're making everything better. And
the marketing team is working overtime.
Yep. Absolutely, that's what you're calling it, aren't you?
I think working towards player safety should be, the number one goal. And I think there are other portions of the game that could be, refined. I think the one piece that I would look at is years ago when it was Adam Jones was playing for Wales, and someone came in from probably 5-10 meters out and cleared him out in a ruck and basically tackled him off of a ruck. Mm-hmm. And World Rugby looked at that and said, you shouldn't be allowed to tackle a player that doesn't have the ball. Guys that are blowing into the rucks that are doing this, it's completely dangerous. We've got to, legislate that. Good. I think that was, they saw, an issue, crocodile rolls, alligator rolls. They saw an issue. Guys are, blowing out, their knees, blowing Achilles tendons and stuff like that. Let's get rid of that. That's good for the game of rugby. And that has player safety in mind. I think this is all theater, and this doesn't actually have player safety in mind. And so, I think,
back to one of your earlier points, though, is at what point have we changed the game rugby too much?
And that's the other thing, too, is, at some point in the community level, will this come to where some refs are, are enforcing the tackle height? Some refs aren't. Is this a question that we have to have at the beginning of a match where you go to the ref to go, for me with the scrum half, I got to ask, when's the ball out of a ruck? That's, one of my always questions with the ref at the beginning of the game. Is the next question going to be, all right, ref, what's the tackle height for today? Is it the shoulders? Is it the sternum? Is it the waist? What are we playing with?
Yeah, no doubt. One of the greatest challenges in terms of growing the sport, and the US is probably one of the greatest examples because it is relatively new to here, at least to most audiences, is how technical the game is. And it's only become more technical as the years have gone by, as you pointed out. And even though it's rooted in player safety and its intentions are pure, its practice is where we have gripes. And that's where the interpretations can be left up to this guy and that guy, and everybody's got a different definition. That's what's crippling the game from being able to be exposed to new audiences, because the harder it is, you look at soccer, right? And to those in Europe, we call them football, right? It's so simple. Put the ball in the back of the net, and who does it more often wins. Sure, there's a bunch of stuff in between, but we'll figure that out along the way. Basketball, you get two for this and three for that. Have at it. Right. So, but with rugby, it's far harder to be able to learn the intricacies of the game. So it has to only be adopted for it to grow. It has to grow with that player and with that audience. So this, I think, maybe in principle, in theory, is a great idea. And to your point earlier, Rob, I have no clue whether how they implement it, what the regulations are, how it will be, the consistency will be born. All of those are still question marks, but the trials are ongoing and we'll stay with them to be able to see what the results may be. They've got another season to be able to go in South Africa. It's still yet undecided if they're going to continue their trial and move it to other broader market. We'll stay on that because I'm pretty sure it's going to be a hot topic for quite a while. Gentlemen, as we go into the latter part of this talk here, I want to be able to throw back to you each with a final thought, with one question in mind. How will this change the game for the future if it does come to be? And I'm going to hand it over to you, Mike, where we started this all earlier.
I was going to say, I think if it's implemented well and it's implemented in the youth level and it filters itself naturally, it could have the potential to be, make rugby safer. Then again, like we said, just because we're lowering tackle height doesn't mean that you're lowering the amount of injuries. It will potentially make for better tacklers. Which who could say that maybe that filters into, you got guys that are tackling lower at, youth level and, age grade level, and then they eventually become part of the national team and they just know how to tackle low. And maybe that's the one, way that it kind of helps out eventually is, youth players get to tackle better. But that being said, I am not sure you're going to have so many old men. And I'll count myself as one of them.
Everybody in this ring can count themselves as that.
Yeah. So many old players that this is not something that is,
right,
absolutely feasible in, the club level game. We're so ingrained to tackle, below the shoulders. And even then, get a few high pokes in there every once in a while. But maybe for the youth level, and bringing it up, that might have some effects. Other than that, maybe in the long term it helps out, but who knows?
So you're saying in the next 5 to 10 years is not going to make a difference, really?
Yeah, potentially not. Maybe in 15 years you get, some kid that, really learned how to, tackle really well because they introduced this and he was, he was hitting people perfectly at the hip and now he's playing on the national, or he or she is playing at the national level and they're really tearing it up just because they learned to tackle low. But
right,
other than that, who knows?
So it's got to grow through the age grades and up into, semi-professional. And again, we're to make sure that everybody's clear, they're not talking about introducing this at a professional level just yet. Could that be? Yeah. But obviously only once it's successful, all the other levels leading up to it. Rob, what is your thoughts? How will this change the game?
Well, I think players and coaches will adapt. I think that play, especially at the highest of levels, if it trickles up to that point, you're going to see the most athletic, the best players who are in, full-time training environments be able to adapt and drop their tackle height. But for me, that's not the question. The question is safety should, do they really want to improve safety of the game? Do they really want to cut down on concussions? If so, then safety has to be a holistic approach.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of like with addressing school shootings. I don't want to get too political, but, being a dean, we can talk about that. We can talk about having armed security guards in schools, but, if you're going to leave the doors and every door of the school wide open for kids just to come in,
you're still at risk.
You're still at risk. So you've got to think of it holistically. How do we do a better job at protecting the school environment? Same thing. How do we do a better job at protecting, at making the game safer? Well, again, it goes back to what I talked about, the proper training, et cetera. Proper definition, et cetera. But you've also got to address the runner. I think you also have to, especially at the community level, you have to put the protocols in place to make sure that guys aren't going out there the week after they got dinged and playing the game, because they're going to be open up to a greater risk of concussions without having gone through the proper protocol. Because again, they're making choices to put themselves out there. There's nobody enforcing it like an official, like a team doctor or whomever.
Yeah. Really, really interesting thoughts and a great debate all around, gentlemen. I'll share my final thought on this one, and I haven't actually said it until now, and I don't know whether it's really a factor or not, but I'll throw it out there nevertheless and leave it for the general public to be able to curse me afterwards, which, by the way, you can do under the handle at RugbyRandPod. But you know, everybody knows that there are ongoing and probably more to come lawsuits against the various unions surrounding head injuries and how they've been handled and how players have been asked to continue playing while injured. There's a whole saga that is still unveiling. Now, I feel in a way that if the unions did happen to be able to say, hey, here's what we've done to be able to change it for the future, it might put you in a better and more positive light when you do have to be able to repent for your sins. So it might say, hey, we've done bad. We recognize that. Here's how we're choosing to change it. So that's one thing to be able to think about. The other half of it is, I think it's more so about being able to grow the game, because they're not stupid at the top. If you don't have more players taking up the sport, its longevity is going to be much shorter than if you did have positive numbers. And where we are right now is those numbers are decreasing for a variety of reasons, especially in important regions which have traditionally been very successful in recruiting. Now, in other areas like the US, we're getting better, but that's because it's an emerging sport. So they do have those same challenges and those same objections of player safety. So it allows you to be able to cover both those things at one time, but it comes down to execution. I don't care where it comes from, what your plan is or your intention. Let's talk about the practice. And that's what we need to, I think the rugby community and fans alike want to be able to see. How is it being rolled out? Where is it happening? What does it look like? Show me a video of a game and what it looks like. You obviously have it. Show me that. I haven't seen one post. Have you guys seen any posts of actual game footage of what this looks like?
No.
And that might already squash many of the complaints if you could actually see it, because all of this is theory. So perhaps you out there have managed to be able to see something like this in your local community, or maybe you've seen some footage. If you have, tell us about it by following us under the handle at RugbyRantPod. You can continue to be able to enjoy our content weekly, whether it be through our social media services or any major podcast platform that you may choose. We are available weekly with this edition and more like this through our Run, Parcel, Kick interviews, where we take the opportunity to meet with a rugby insider from across Major League Rugby and North American Rugby in general, by way of what we call the Run, Parcel, Kick interviews. Gentlemen, it has been a blast. It's been a great debate. I've enjoyed this one thoroughly, and I think we'll leave it for the fans to be able to decide the fate of what this may be as a result of this conversation. So again, you can tell us online by tagging any one of us or the podcast itself. If you have a question or a comment, we'd love to be able to hear from you. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Again, joining us is Mike, the Grand Poobah Perazzini, and of course, Rob, the Hammer Hammerschmidt, on behalf of Scott, the Big Guy Ferrari, not joining us here today, still crying his eyes out in NOLA gold colors. But again, it's been great, and we will take the opportunity to see you all again at the next. Thank you for joining us for episode 128. Bye-bye for now.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.